This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I think we've got a few new faces. Can we introduce ourselves? Could you start?
My name is Leela.
I'm Hogan.
My name is Rebecca.
Veronica.
Alex.
Nico.
Tom.
Ute.
Karen.
Junior.
Natalie.
Christine.
Gerald.
Michael.
Andy.
Doug.
Todd.
Todd.
Doug. Doug. I'm Doug too. No, I'm Mike. That was good. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jikoji. A kind of foggy day on our hands, a nice quiet day. We've sat a little bit, we've been quiet and still together, which in itself is miraculous, a kind of miracle. And now we have a short time to talk together. I always feel in talking after we sit together a kind of almost an embarrassment to have to speak, because we've done this nice work of being still and quiet together, and then and then a mouth has to open. And often it doesn't seem even necessary. With many of these Dharma talks, traditionally, they're begun with a kind of story or a little episode from past teaching, most commonly from Tang Dynasty, China, when the Chan tradition was very strong. We have many of these koans, or stories, and oftentimes they're conversations, they're little back and forth chit chat between a teacher and a student, or a couple wise guys. They'll talk with one another, but this one that I want to bring up today is just a question. A very simple question. So this is case 45 from the Mumankan. Mumankan is a collection of these sayings. And Hoen is the teacher, Hoen Tozan. So this is the case. Hoen says, even Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya Buddha are servants of that one. So I ask you, who is that one? That's it. That's the entire case. Hoan says, even the Buddha of the present time, the manifest Buddha of this time, Shakyamuni Buddha, and the Buddha of the future, the Buddha of, you could say, even the realized nature of your own being right now, and the potential manifestation or realization or enjoyment of it, which is what Maitreya means, the complete completion of it, are in service of something or someone. So Hoan asks, What is this? What is it? Who is it that the Buddha to be and the Buddha that is right now, is in service of, is accountable to? So that's our koan for today. That's our question for today. Not too long ago, we had a session here. Tanjoe session, it's called, a week of practice. And our focus, with myself and Doug and Eric teaching, we focused on what's called the Brahmaviharas, or the divine realizations or manifestations. They're also called the Apramanas. And Apramana means it can't be measured. It can't be finished. It's something that goes on continuously. So during the session, we studied these Apramanas. And we chanted them. Thank you for chanting the Metta Sutta today. Because the Metta is one of the Apramanas. Metta means loving kindness, or you could say just love. And the other Apramana, the other Brahmavihara is Karuna, which means compassion. Able to be with one who is suffering, to hear that, and to be with and to care for and to attend to the suffering of both yourself and others. And the third one is called mudita, which means to feel gladness or joy or appreciative joy for yourself and also, but particularly for others, to have a sense of an extensive sense of gladness or appreciation. And the fourth one is equanimity, upeksha it's called in Sanskrit or Pali. It's a means to have this big broad view that sees the non-contradiction of opposites, that sees both sides, that can accommodate and tolerate the varieties and issues with tolerance and peace and see that they're both interconnected, and the various, I think with our time today, with our political time, we feel the polarity of our whole culture, so the practice of equanimity, of seeing both sides, is very, very important for us now. So, at any rate, that is what we studied. We studied that for a week, and we talked about it. And one of the important points that came up in this study is that these aren't just nice attributes. These aren't just good thoughts about these aren't just ideals. These aren't just concepts, but in order for these to be, this to be practice, in order for this to be actually a manifestation of our life, all these attributes have to be actually taken up. They have to be actually you have to actually make a choice. I think oftentimes when we come to a situation like this, where we come and we meditate, well, first of all, when we come to a situation like this, I don't feel that any of us, I feel that the actual coming here to meditate, coming here to practice is first of all, it's a choice. It's a deliberate thing that we do. And we don't do it casually, and we don't do it frivolously. We're actually those people that actually are interested in what it is to lead a meaningful life, and what it is to arrive at the what you might call the completion of ourselves, or to lead a life that's flourishing, that has virtue, that has real virtue, that has purpose. So we can say, I'm assuming, unless there's a holdout here somewhere, I'm assuming that all of us are actually serious in that way. And we have a we have within us a kind of, you might say, a kind of request, a kind of very deep request to arrive at the totality of our being, to come to terms with what it means to be real. And these apramanas are actually a manifestation, an expression of that that sense of purpose. So in a meditation hall, we sit and we become quiet and still. We become acquainted with our body and mind. And when we meet other things, when we meet other beings, when we're in the world, these apramanas, loving actual, the capacity and the choice to love, to bring loving kindness to whatever we meet, to meet other people with compassion, to bring gladness, brightness, uprightness, a sense of connection with other people, and to see the big picture with equanimity. Those, in a sense, are as practitioners, as serious people seeking the meaning of life, those are actually our tools. And we can choose to actually pick them up. I think oftentimes we sometimes get a kind of passive view about spiritual practice, or about maybe about religion altogether. We assume we come to a religious situation or a spiritual situation or a practice situation, and we expect things to kind of be presented to us, or they'll just come to us by themselves spontaneously. But the understanding from the apramanas is that we actually choose this. And we actually choose to bring these attributes forward. In our practice, we have this experience of actually intention. Chetana is the Sanskrit term for choice. And chetana is a rather broad term. It also means besides meaning to choose, it means to have an actual will, to have the sense of choosing to do something, to have the will or the capacity to bring it forward. It means aspiration. In our practice, we experience this because in certain parts of our practice we have to. There are actually traditionally it's called the four engagements. So, the four ways that we come to practice, and we experience this in our practice. The first one is called a forceful engagement. And forceful engagement, we experience this when we're settling down and we have a very active mind and we need to focus our practice specifically on our maybe on our breath or on our posture, and we need to actually bring our attention to that, to the object and the focus of meditation. Commonly it's the breath, or sometimes it's the posture, or just a sense of presence. So we need to, the first engagement is forceful or willful engagement, where we actually come to it. There's another type of engagement called interrupted engagement, and I'm sure we've all experienced that, where you're practice a little bit, and then you notice that your mind or your attention wanders off, it drifts off a little bit, and you have to kind of bring yourself back. So it's interrupted in the sense that you have to come back. You have to come back to your place of practice or your focus of practice. There's another way of looking at interrupted engagement, and in a sense of allowing your practice to be interrupted. In other words, like if your practice is you're following your breath, you're attending the inhalation and exhalation, anapanasati it's called, you actually, instead of just focusing on your breath, you broaden your attention, and all the other noticings that go on, like the noticing of, say, a pain in your knee, or the sound of the birds, is with that attention to your breath. So it's interrupted in the sense that it accommodates all these other attentions, and all these other attentions are brought into kind of one broad attention. The third engagement is called continuous engagement. And that is simply engagement where you're just with your object of meditation. You're just there. You're just you're following your breath, and you're with your breath. You're present, and you're just present. You don't have any place else to go. You're just here. It just goes on. That's the third engagement. That's continuous engagement. The fourth engagement, interestingly, is called spontaneous engagement. And that's where engagement just happens without will, without thought. It's just taking care of itself. In our parlance, it's called zazen is doing zazen. There's no sense of an agency, of self-agency. There's just zazen is doing zazen. These are the four types of engagement. So we have this koan before us that even the Buddha and Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya Buddha are servants or attentive to something, someone. So who is that one? And Mumon, who's the compiler of this collection of cases, has a little commentary about this. He says, if you clearly recognize that one, it's just like meeting your father on the crossroads. It's not necessary to ask if it is he or not. So, I ask you, who is that one? Mumon gives us a little hint. It's someone, it's something that is actually all the Buddhas and all the Buddha of this time and the Buddha of the future time are in service of that one. And that one is not something far away, it's something very close. It's like meeting your father or your mother or your best friend. And you don't have to say, who is this? It's that close, it's that intimate. And it's interesting, this commentary, he says, it's like meeting that one at the crossroads. So a crossroad is a place where obviously, this word comes up again, you can choose. You can make a choice. Habitually, your choice might be just to, if it wasn't a crossroads, just to move, keep going straight. But here you have an option at a crossroads to move, to choose the right or the left. So who is that one? Did you want to say something? Yes?
Yes. Is it everyone and no one?
Maybe it's you.
There are a lot of crossroads, and we don't know where they are, but like driving along Skyline, and we intersect a deer crossroad and a deer. There it is.
Spontaneous crossroads, huh? Well, we oftentimes, someone else want to say something? Yeah.
I wonder if it has something to do with the vows that we're supposed to make.
The vows?
Vows.
Yeah. What do you mean about the vows?
The vows to help all sentient beings attain Buddhahood. Mm. It's kind of a crossroads where we make a choice and we
have to come back. Good. Anyone else? Yeah.
I like what Karen said. Comes to mind because of the difficulty that you started out with language. So I want to say, who isn't that one?
Just that one. Even Buddha is accountable. It sounds strange, doesn't it? It almost sounds sacrilegious to say, even Buddha, you know, the founding teacher of this practice, is kind of working for someone, is in the service of someone. Who is that one? And if it's not you, what do you want to say?
What comes to my mind is the Tathagata.
Tathagata? The Tathagata?
Yeah, that's the one.
The one.
It seems to me.
The Tathagata is another name for the Buddha. And
Mother Nature.
Tathata. Tathata means thusness or as it isness, and the Tathagata means one who has gone beyond or gone the way of all the Buddhas. So in my experience of Buddhist practice, and I think many others' experience of Buddhist practice, people that are interested in spirituality or religion, we oftentimes have a sense of that we are in service of the religious realm, that we an individual come with our own personal history and our own issues and our own mental fabrications. We come into this practice as a kind of supplicant or some kind of novitiate. We come in as a come into this to work for the religion, to work for the spiritual practice, and there is traditionally in India there is a what do they call it, the four or the three disciplines, three yogas. There's the jnana yoga, which is the yoga of knowledge, of coming to knowledge, of actually coming to understanding. And then there's karma yoga, which is the yoga of action, of activity, of doing. And you could say that the meditation practice is karma yoga. It's actually the practice of actually doing something. You know? We're doing what the Buddha did. We're doing the meditation practice. But the third discipline is bhakti yoga, and bhakti is the yoga of devotion, of surrender. So commonly, and not just this religion, but most spiritual practices have a sense of like these helpless beings, these worthless beings are coming into the spiritual realm, the religious realm, the practice realm, as a person, as someone in need, as someone who wants to acquire something, and who must surrender themselves to the practice. But this, in contrast to that kind of view, that kind of common view, this case is saying, no, even Shakyamuni Buddha, even the founding Buddha, and the Buddha yet to be, the Buddha of our potential enlightenment, the realized Buddha of the future, religion itself is in service of someone. So, who is that one? Nico.
Well, I know that Kobin, the founder of the Koji, said that membership in our Sangha is universal. So that would include, I would assume, all past, present, and future. And so the answer would seem to kind of point to a sense of all, which is kind of what everybody is saying, seems to be saying, a variation of it. Mm. I mean, it's, I forget quite what Karin said, but it's you and me, or I don't know quite what it was, but it was a sense of all and maybe even no one at once. So it's a universal goulash.
Do you think you could also say it's all Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya Buddha are servants of you? You specifically? I mean, you, Nico? Could you say that?
I think so, just as I am also in service to you and all. Mm. If interconnectedness is interconnectedness, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. then Good. It is.
Doug and I sat with a teacher named Katagiri Roshi with Kobin. Katagiri Roshi came to America at the invitation of Suzuki Roshi, and the three of them sort of became the kind of call it the important units of early Soto Zen. So Doug and I sat, when was it? That was
early 70s.
That's a while ago. Yeah. Goodness.
It's all relative.
In context to what you said, Nico, this is what Katagiri says about this topic. You should understand that oneness needs you. Dharma or totality really needs you, whoever you are, wherever you are. This is why we have to deal with it and make it alive. The moment when totality appears in your life is called ki. It's a Japanese character from China, ki. There's also another term called Zen Ki. You may have heard that. Zen Ki means total dynamic working. But Ki in Japanese means dynamic functioning or a vital opportunity or the what's at hand, what's manifest. That's Ki. When totality appears in your life, it's called ki. We have to return to the first moment of activity. Zazen itself is that first moment. We have to meet it. And then Katagiri says, not only do we have to meet it, we have to pinch it. We have to pinch it. I love that term. We have to pinch it. How can you pinch totality? Right? That's That's chetana, that's choice. We have to pinch it. It is already there. Very simply, it is already there. But often we do not give it attention. So we practice day by day, and it supports our life. There's a little more from this, an interesting from this case, from case 45. This is oftentimes these cases come with a verse, and this is the verse, and the verse says, don't draw another's bow, don't ride another's horse, don't speak of another's faults, don't try to know another's affairs. But what if you live in a community? And who doesn't live in a community? And what if you're in a relationship with another person or a group of people? Our life is kind of woven together with many people and many events. And yet, even Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya Buddha are servants of one, of one. Who's that one? Recently, I was friend told me about I guess he's a kind of scientific guru. His name is Terence McKenna. Have you heard of Terence McKenna? Has anybody heard of him? Terence, in this talk, I think he's kind of all over the place with a lot of scientific stuff. A very interesting guy. But in this particular talk, he was talking about history, how the sense of time. We have a sort of assumption about time or history, particularly our somatic sense, our sense of time in our body. We presume that events are caused by the causal necessity of events that precede them. In other words, like the moment just before this present moment shapes or precedes this present moment. That's our ordinary understanding. And Terence McKenna says that we have an assumption that the actual this present moment of reality is actually being pushed forward by the events preceding it. That's our usual understanding. That's my understanding, in a sense, that there's causal conditions and that the mic of a moment ago is actually pushing or preceding the mic of this moment, and so on and so forth. But Terence McKenna says, look at it another way. Look at it another way. That there are actually attractors. He calls them attractors. There's actually an impetus. There's an evolutionary impetus for events to come instead of being pushed by the past. There's actually an impetus for the present moment is being pulled. It's being pulled forward. And they're being pulled by something called perfect novelty. So we have an evolutionary kind of impetus toward what he called hyper connectivity, or a sense of increased complexity and diversity and integration, and we're actually the actual life as we know it is actually being pulled forward by this by this attractor, which is seeking or pulling us toward perfect novelty, or what he calls perfect novelty, where everything is integrated and actually even more complex. You know, it's ultimately diverse. So I thought that was very interesting in thinking about choice, like our individual choices have, our choices to practice and so on have, do they have an actual impetus that is, like this key, like something that's a totality that's actually pulling us forward? I mean, I'm bringing this up as a question. I don't know, obviously. But I find this very, very interesting. And does anyone have a thought about that?
Yeah, I got a couple. One is like a tree and the flow of nutrients and water through the roots. It's getting sucked up to be manifest as, so there's this actual suction that happens. The meniscus effect with water. You know, I think people understand that with bugs, they can float on water because the meniscus effect keeps them from sinking in.
Mm-hmm.
And so the water has this facility to stretch in a way, and certain materials actually have a tremendous force to suck water. And so it's actually has to move in order to stay in equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of metaphor may apply elsewhere, like maybe even with a mother and a kid. There's that she needs to give milk because her breasts are full.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid is hungry and he's screaming because his guts are saying, I need, and so the two meet. And so there's that.
So that's kind of a parallel to our spiritual work to, why are we seeking totality or wholeness, you know? Or the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might be problematic to say we're being sucked, but being pulled sounds a little bit better. Yeah, did you?
Theologians are speaking of evolution being pulled forward by God.
Oh, yeah. Huh. So there's a kind of parallel track.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
The same thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like the waters there in the brooks in the stream. They kind of all flow somewhere. They're kind of being pulled by gravity towards the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the but then the ocean also evaporates it back up. So in the end, they're just all water.
Like a cycle.
Like a cycle. Yeah. But they're also a part of the cycle. But they are also the cycle. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like us, we're also a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
In us.
Did I hear a lunch bell? Any additional comments? Should we be pulled forward to lunch? Okay.
May our intentions equally extend to every being and place. With the true merit of Buddha's way, beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.